My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really appreciate being here and being with everybody and listening to the people who are celebrating their birthday. And what I'm going to talk about tonight, we're on the fifth step, and I'm going to talk about basically some of the things that were said tonight and basically what's going on here. You know, I've been doing these step series for many years now, maybe over 25 years. And, you know, as I've grown up in AA and I've matured, and I hope I've matured and had a better understanding of some of the things that are going on, the way I present these things and what I like to talk about has changed. And there was a time when I spoke about sort of like how to do the steps. There's nothing wrong with
ice cream.
Wow. There was a time where I spoke about how to do the steps, and there are people that talk about how to do the steps. They do a very good job. I could probably do that. I don't really. You know, we all have a message that's on our heart that we want to talk about. I don't want to talk about how to do step five or how to do step four. There are people who can help you with that. And let me suggest one, like your sponsor. You can read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never seen an alcoholic who really desires to grow up in this deal and do these steps that really has a hard time. You may have a hard time ultimately doing it, you know, or, you know, like not... You know, I heard somebody say the other day, I don't know, it was Albert Einstein or Abraham Lincoln was one of these guys that said, you know, if it takes me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I spend 5 hours sharpening the axe. And, you know, that's sort of like what happens with the step. We spend about 5 hours trying to think about how we do step four, and then we finally do step four. And, you know, so if you really want to do these things, if you don't want to do them, there's every excuse in the world. If you want to do them, you'll figure out how to do them. You'll ask the right person. You'll figure that out. I'm not here to say, tell you this is how you do step five. You know, the big book's pretty straightforward on how you do five, how you do four, how you do all these steps. You got a lot of other step meetings. I'm going to talk about something else having to do with step five. At least I think it has to do with step five. And ultimately, what it has to do with is developing your relationship with God, which is what I think all these steps are only about. That's the one thing that these are all about. It's all about developing. It says, see to it your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you. And countless others. All through the book, it's about relationship with God. Every one of these steps is designed to somehow improve that relationship with God right up until we get to step 11. And step 5 is no exception to that. You know, I was thinking and part of what I'm going to talk about, by the way, I want to read a poem, which may have nothing to do with step 5. It's just a poem I want to read. But part of, you know, we read Man in the Glass. We read... Old Violin, this is something that I have a heart for. I want to read it to you. Some of you have heard it already. But, you know, it's funny. When the birthday people were being introduced, when Willie was being introduced, you know, AA isn't interesting. AA, especially, I don't know much about AA gals, but AA guys, I mean, it's probably one of the only fellowships in the world where some guy can say, and I'm going to tell you, he's just not full of shit. And that's like... That's like a compliment. That when somebody says to you in AA, a guy says to a guy, you know, he's not full of shit. It's like saying, I love you, buddy. You know, it's like an endearing thing, you know. That's about as good a compliment as you can get in here. Yeah, he's not full of shit, you know. And it's an alcoholic, I love you, you know. But what I'm going to say, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you the truth about something real major in here. I want to leave you with something which is the absolute, I'm going to tell you something, based upon 27 years of experience, of what I've seen here, what I've read here, what I'm going to tell you tonight is the absolute truth. Now, notwithstanding the fact that it's the absolute truth, some of you are going to get it and some of you aren't. It's as simple as that. But I'm going to tell you the truth about something. And it's so clear, the truth is so clear, it's like in front of your face. It's in front of your, you know what I mean? The truth has to do with this. You see this here? The truth has to do with, you know, tonight I drove up, Frank picks me up at the car room with a bunch of other guys. About six of us get on in his van. It's a conversion van. We get on, I call it getting on the bus. And we watch a movie. The movie we're watching on the way up here is something called The Big Lebowski. Anybody seen that? You got to go rent that. You got to go see that. You got to see it about 10 times, you know? And We're going to watch the second half on the way back. I can't think of anything better to get ready for this kind of meeting than to watch The Big Lebowski. You know, and some of you have seen it and understand what I'm talking about. But it's about getting on the bus. It's about this. It's about Willie coming up here and saying these simple words. I went to this meeting, and it's not just because of me. It's just I want you to understand the attitude. I went to this meeting. I saw this guy, Russ. I followed him around. I went to the restaurant. I went there. I went here, you know, and now I'm here, and I have a relationship with this guy, and it's about what's actually going on in front of your face every day, which will tell you how to stay sober for the rest of your life and be happy. And it's all through the book, and it's all about your relationship with God. It's all about people, and it's just we're stewed in it. And if you don't see it, you just won't see it. But let me read this poem, which I don't think has anything to do with anything, but I just love the poem. Now this is a little bit. I'll tell you what. I love the guy in the glass. I love the guy in the glass because it's like an Alky poem, and the old violin's like an Alky poem. Now I believe this is like an Alky poem, but it's a little more Shakespearean. I feel a little funny reading it in Alcoholics Anonymous but I'm going to read it anyway. Some of you have seen it. Because it's about, it's pretty much about your life. But this is by Robert Frost. Some of you have heard this. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both, and be one traveler long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay, and leaves no step had trodden black, oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. You know, you're going to have to ask yourself which road you're on. You know, after this meeting, you're going to have a choice as to going down one road or the other road. We all have these choices. And whichever road you pick is going to determine where you're going to be 5 years from now. It's going to determine who your friends are, who you run into, whether you're sober, whether you're not sober. It's all about choices. You see, once the Lord lifted the booze from you, you see, you had no choice. You were people that had no choice. You know why you're in Alcoholics Anonymous? Because you had no choice. See, let me tell you what I did. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I looked at a guy and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I didn't say, I need help, I'd like to stop drinking. I didn't say, I need help, I'd like to have some coffee. I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. If you never got to the point where you could not stop drinking, where you were drinking against your will, then you and I suffer from different types of alcoholism. You know, I suffer from the kind of alcoholism where I could not stop drinking. So who I was going to hang out with, where I was going to be, what I was going to do with my life, there was never two roads for me. There was only one road that led to death and destruction. There was never a choice, do I go home to my wife and family or do I go to the bar? There was I never had the choice of going. Normal people make decisions like, I'll go home tonight. Alcoholics go to the bar. Or if they're forced at gunpoint to go home, they go home pissed off, thinking about the bar. I never had a choice. Now, I had this disease lifted from me, the physical part of this disease, the crazy, the obsession, and I was put in a path where I was able to make a choice. I can no longer say I had to go. I can no longer say I had to hang out in the front with all the guys talking about the girls. I can no longer say I can't turn off my cell phone. I can no longer make excuses for the things I did. I can no longer say I can't go to that meeting. I make a choice as to who I want to hang out with. Willie made a choice as to whether he wanted to. He said, I think I'll go to dinner with those guys. We make a choice as to whether to be on the bus or not be on the bus. We make a choice with who to listen to, what books to read. You get to make that choice. Based upon the choice you make, it's going to decide what kind of sobriety you have. Now, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to tell you a couple of stories. I want to share some stories about myself because our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like and what we are like now. And I hope these stories sort of indicate a little bit about where I'm coming from. Let me just read a couple of fast deals right here. This is all about a relationship, your relationship with God. Now, your relationship with the God of your understanding, and I can talk about this now. You know why? Because we're past step three. We're past step four. We're past the part in the big book, if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, where you have already gotten the part where you have realized the three things that we must be convinced of. That we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives, that no human power could relieve their alcoholism, and only God could and would if he was sought. And then after that it says, being convinced, we're now at step three. We're way past step three. So I don't have to get into an argument with you about whether there's a God or there isn't a God. We put that to bed. We've quit the debate in society. We've read chapter of the agnostics that says, I know we're pissed off about God. That kind of thinking has to be abandoned. We all agree. We're all like passengers on the ship. We normally wouldn't associate, but we agree on one thing. We agree on the A, B's, and C's. We agree we have to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. We're doing it, and now we're at step five. We know that has something to do with something. We're not sure what, you know what I mean? We're not sure. We may have done it. We may have done it tentatively. We may have not done it 100%. The only thing you do 100% here is step one, but the bottom line is we're on the same page here. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. A distinguished American psychologist, William James, in the book Varieties of Religious Experience, indicates the multiple ways which men have discovered God. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, and color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship. With whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms. Has anybody ever had a relationship? And I am not talking about a sexual, romantic relationship, which predominates the thinking of most people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not talking about that. You can kick that to the curb. Because that's about taking. That's not about giving. That's about, the sexual relationship is about taking. It's not about giving. I'm talking about something else. Anybody ever had a relationship with another human being? Because if we're going to talk about a relationship with God, we better define our terms. I think the greatest relationship I ever had, I mean, I'm just telling you this, in recent memories or times, besides maybe with my relationship with my mother, which was kind of strange because she was an alcoholic. And I loved her dearly. She was wonderful woman. But, you know, during a part of my life when I grew up, she was like drunk. And that was a tough deal. Unless you come from an alcoholic home, I can't explain to you. You know, I think one of the greatest relationships, the purest relationship, the most loving relationship I ever had was with my sponsors. Certainly with my first and second sponsor, my third sponsor now. You know, I'm going to tell you something. This is the truth. And the truth of the matter is, my first and second sponsor probably knows more about me, I'm probably more honest with them than I've ever been about anybody on the planet, including my wife. Including my wife. By far. Now, this isn't something I've necessarily admitted in front of my wife, although I think she suspects it. I think she suspects it. You know why? Because I was pretty, and you know, I'm not going to say I was 100% transparent because everybody hides something. I've never gotten to 100%, but I'll tell you something. I'm about as transparent with my sponsors. They know me probably better than anybody would know me. They probably know more about me than anybody knows anything about me. My sponsors, being transparent. If what we're learning, so what is a relationship? What is a good relationship? Well, the best relationship I had was with my sponsors, and that was because, when I think about it, is because I was transparent with them. Because I could tell them anything. I could call them up at any time. They would listen to me. They knew everything about me, and I was unashamed. I was not ashamed in front of them. I had one or two people that I was not ashamed of. Blessed is the man who has another man who he can talk to and not be ashamed. If what we have learned and felt means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, and color, are children of a living Creator with whom they form a relationship. So part of having a relationship, I don't want to hear about who you're going to bed with or who you hang out with or who you're smoking. I want to know about who knows everything about you, even the bad stuff, the worst stuff about you. I want to know that's a relationship. Everybody else is just acquaintances. Further on, clear-cut directions are showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, the personal stories, describes in his own language, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. That's what our stories are supposed to be all about. That's the main point of this book. That's the only point of this book, as a matter of fact. Every chapter. Even so, it's all over the place. All over the place. Pick any chapter. Page 57. Even so has God restored us to all our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly. But he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near him, he disclosed himself to us. This is the how and why, but first we had to quit playing God. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. We, in turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life is given to us, if you will, provide a design for living. Goes on and on, all about God, our relationship with God. Finally, in step five, and I go to the end, and vision for you and everything like that, but finally in step five, this is what it says in step five, the starting of step five. I mean, what is step five? Admit to our God himself as another human being. The exact nature. What could that possibly have to do with relationships and fellowships and things like that? It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? This is step five. Most people miss this part. They want to know the nuts and bolts of five, but they don't understand the whys of five. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. And to discover the obstacles in our path, the obstacles to that relationship. Don't you understand? This is all about him and knowing him and having a relationship with him, fellowshipping with him. And I'm going to talk a little bit about fellowship, because if you really want to know what kind of relationship you have with God, look about who you're hanging out with and what kind of relationship you have with other people. Look at the quality of your relationship with other people, how many, what kind of quality it is, and what it's really about when it's superficial. That'll tell you a lot about your relationship with God. Your relationship with God is mirrored in your relationship with who you hang out with and what kind of relationship you have with other people. Why you hang out with them, what it is about them you hang out with them, what you're looking for them and what they're looking for you, whether it's selfish or unselfish, how you feel when you're hanging out with them, how they feel about you, what's going on in your heart, what it's doing for you, whether it's building you up, whether it's building them up. What's going on with that relationship with other people will tell you exactly what's really going on with your relationship with God. You don't have to guess at it. We have been, you know why? Because it says, you know what it says about God? Let me tell you what it says about God and vision for you. It says, he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You crave fellowship, he'll show you how to create it. If you don't have God in your life, you're not going to know who to fellowship with. You're going to fellowship with somebody else that's not helping you. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. And in other words, your relationship with God and your fellowship with God has an enormous effect on your life on the planet. Don't kid yourself. It has enormous effect on whether or not you're going to stay sober or not. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path, the obstacles to that relationship. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. We're casting them out because we want a better relationship with Him, which is ultimately going to lead to a better relationship with other people. Now I'm going to flip over from there to vision for you. I want to read you something. This is what we're going to basically talk about for the most of the night. I want to talk about getting on the bus. I want to talk about this group. I want to talk about Willie. I want to talk about what's really going on here. I want to talk about who's going to make it and who absolutely is not. That's what I want to talk about. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. Let me tell you something. Getting sober is easy. It really is. Everybody, don't you understand? Everybody stops drinking. Don't you get it? Everybody, don't you understand? No, I understand there's a few. We got a couple guys that can't stop for a day, they die. But don't you understand? Everybody stops drinking. Not everybody stays stops. Not everybody who stops drinking feels good about themselves. Not everybody who stops drinking makes it to 27, 30, 40 years. Not everybody who stops drinking has quality sobriety, has a relationship with God. What good does it mean to stop drinking? I mean, I'm glad you're not drinking. Maybe something will happen. What good does it mean to stop drinking if you're suicidal? If you want to blow your brains out? If you're hurting other people? What good is it to stop drinking if you're doing the same damage around you that you did when you weren't? What good is it to stop drinking if you suffer from loneliness all the time? Or you feel like crap or depressed all the time? No, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I'm not telling anybody to drink, although probably some people should. It might help them out. Really? Really? Because it would get them serious. Now and then, a serious drinker being dry at the moment. You know, everybody in here is dry at the moment. You're all dry at the moment. I'm dry at the moment. Says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I work better. I'm having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. Doesn't matter how much time. Yeah, I got a call from a guy who has 30 years. Known him for like 20, 25. Haven't seen him for a while. Every time I hear him on the phone, you know what he says to me? He says, you know, we got to get together. I said, well, why don't you come here and there? He says, I can't. I have to go to work. He's always got an excuse. 30 years. 30 years is not a short period of time. You know what he told me on the phone? He called me. He says, I just want to let you know. I said, I've decided I'm going to stop going to meetings. You know, they're just bothering me. You know what I said to him? I said, hey, I'm not going to tell you his name. Joe. I'll say, Joe, I said, you want to know something? You decided to stop going to meetings a year ago. I said, you decided to stop going to meetings a year ago. I said, you decided a year ago to stop going to meetings. And I recount to them, every time we want to get together, you always have an excuse. He says, you're worshiping at the God of work. I said, you cut yourself from a year ago. You're just telling me that right now so that when you ultimately go out and drink, you could say it's not your fault because you told somebody about it and because you're just making your excuse to drink. I said, but don't kid yourself. You left AA a long time ago. I said, I'll speak to you later. And I hung up the phone. We know our friend is like a boy because, you know, he's got 30 years. He's either going to get it or not. I'm not going to sit there for 5 hours and talk him into it. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again. You know why? You know why? Because he isn't happy about his sobriety. You know there are people in AA that are 5, 10, 15 years sober that aren't happy? Did you know that? They'll tell you they're happy. They'll tell you all sorts of stuff. But you can tell by looking in their eye and the way they act that they are miserable, and they make other people miserable. And they're just bleeding deacons, and they're just criticizing everybody and everything, and they're just dry for the moment. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will enable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And that doesn't say you have to have 6 months or 6 years or 26 years. And it says, we have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I consigned to have a life which would be stupid, boring, glum, like some righteous people I say? I know I must get out with that, but how can I? You have a sufficient substitute. Now, this is what they say. This is what they bring up. They bring up relationships. They say, yes, there is a substitute. It is vastly more than that. It is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your life existence lies ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. I want to talk about fellowship. I want to talk fellowship in the fifth step and what it means and why this has to do with building a relationship with God, why it's so important, and why building a relationship with God and the alcoholic will transmit itself into turning you into an individual who have incredible fellowship with other people. It'll be a growing fellowship. You know, you first come in here saying, only A people, only my sponsor, all of you. Next, it'll be all of A. And, you know, one of the things that encourages church, you know, I fellowship with, you don't have to have a white chip in your pocket. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend. You know, I said I'm a deacon in church. Because, you know, our books encourages. You know what it encourages after a while in the family? After, he says, join a church. Join a congregation. You can be a bright spot. More fellowship. More, more, more. Greater fellowship. More fellowship with more people. More people in your life, the fabric of your life. More people that you can turn to and be transparent with that love you and you love them. And you can have service. A greater life. And most incredible life. Drink. Who has time to drink? I got too many people to see. Too much stuff going on. Too much good stuff in my life. Kids, grandkids, wife, daughters, sons, other guys in the church, you know, houses I'm invited to meet guys who are involved in different ministry all over the world. Stuff going on, emails to do. I don't have time to drink. Why would I want to drink? This is all a function or result of my relationship with God, which was built up over the... Now, look, let me tell you, this is what I've seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. People that go to meetings, people that fellowship, people that go to dinner, people that get on the bus, those people, they never have problems. They never drink. Ever. The only time I see people, the first thing alcoholics do, the first sign that they're going to go bad, you just know it, is when they start isolating, is when they move away from the group. When they move away, they have every excuse in the world. You know, even Bill Wilson said, worldly clamors. Worldly clamors. When all of a sudden they start concentrating, you know, now they're well, we talked about the 10 lepers. You know, none of them, you know, went out. They had other, and it's not necessarily to the bar. It's to work all the time. It's to the family all the time. It's to this all the time. And all of a sudden there's no fellowship. Why would there be fellowship? You're in the world. You're struggling and doing this and doing that and wreaking out whatever you, because you know you're managing your life and you know you're going to wreak happiness out of your life. That deal didn't work for you before you came today. What makes you think it's going to work for you now? And all of a sudden, and you know, if I just have more sex, if I have more money, if I have more this, then I'll be happy. That never worked for you. It never worked for me. Just go right back to it. Same old life. And you know why it's the same old life? Because you're the same old person. Because there's been no change inside the heart. There's been no change. All there's been is a stopping drinking. Stopping drinking. People who don't drink are not sober. Sobriety is not defined by not drinking. Now, don't get me wrong. You can be the most unsober person. If you haven't had a drink in 30 years, they're giving you a medallion here. But I can tell you by old timers' terms, sobriety, the way old times look at sobriety, is not necessarily you're not drinking. It has little to do with not drinking. So I'm down, when I was around 10 or 11 years old, I'm down in a football field, baseball field. And when I was 10, what 10-year-old guys look at, or kid, you know, is how well you do in sports. I was always poor at sports. And I mean, I just was. And so they're choosing up sides, and they got about 18 kids, 20 kids on this team, and there's two captains who are the guys who are probably the best. And I remember this deal, and one guy says, I'll take Joe. Another guy says, you guys ever done this thing? I'll take Charlie. And what happens is, as you choose somebody, there's this big group of guys in the middle. As you choose some guy, like Joe goes over to the right, and Charlie goes over to the left. I'll take Joe. And the group starts getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm in the middle of the group, and I'm sitting there, and I'm praying. I didn't even know what prayers were. I didn't even believe in God. And you know what I'm praying for? Not that I'll be first. I'm praying that I won't be last. Because I don't know, has anybody ever been the last guy out there? Yeah, I have. You know, and I can tell you, when you're the last guy out there and you see him peeling away, it's a lonely deal. You know something? And you know what? And you know how they usually pick you? If they pick you at all, they say something like, oh, do we have to take them? You know, they like laugh at you. They're like, both sides are laughing at you. You know, and the only way I didn't even realize this, you know, I'm 10 years old, the only way I could protect myself from that shame, and all alcoholics have shame. All alcoholics are ashamed of themselves. All alcoholics think they're shit. All alcoholics think they don't deserve to be alive. That's why you say things to yourself like, I wish I was dead, I'm stupid, that's why you have all those tape things going on. That's why no matter what's going on in your life, you constantly have this tape running telling you you're an asshole and you don't deserve anything and you're a piece of crap and you're never going to get anything. That's why you feel the way you do all the time, because that stupid alky muzak that's going on in your brain that will never stop unless you get this transformation, and that will lead you back to drinking or loneliness. That's what keeps you. That's the wall between you and other people, because why can you ever be transparent with people when you know you're a shit and you can never tell anybody anything about where you are, so you got to put on this stupid cool act. You know what I mean? Or act, you know, you can never have a relationship with God or anybody because you feel so crappy about yourself, because who would have a relationship with you? You don't deserve that relationship with anybody. That's what Carl Menninger said. He said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves because they think they're pieces of crap. That's what you are. If you're in this room and you're an alcoholic, and I think, is this a closed meeting? So you all are that. Because that's what the big book says. That's why we do these steps. We don't do these steps because we don't have defects. We don't do these things because we're well or we think good of ourselves. We're not in here because somebody put a sign on the wall saying, welcome to Well People's Anonymous. We're in here because we're sick. And believe me, the drink and the alcoholism is just the symptom of the disease. The disease centers in our mind, on our body, and it centers into exactly the crap I'm talking about. Selfishness, self-centeredness, sensitivity, and it's all diluted with 100 forms of delusions that are telling us we don't have any problems in the first place. And all of a sudden, some guy from the podium says some stuff and becomes transparent for 5 seconds and say, holy shit, he's right. It's like a big deal. Because for the first time we see a mirror, because we see through a glass darkly, and the first time we see ourselves, and that's the first thing you got to, hey, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to realize you're in jail in the first place. So I'm sitting there, because you don't know, you don't know. Because you don't know what you don't know. So I'm sitting there in the middle of that football field, and here's the deal. I'm thinking to myself, and I don't think you've ever been in this situation where they're all laughing at you and you feel ashamed, you feel embarrassed. So what you do is you don't cry, you don't whine, you don't run away. You act like it doesn't bother you. In other words, you laugh too, like you're laughing like it's a big joke, like you're laughing at you, like you're sitting with them, you know? Like you split your personality, and you act like it's not bothering you because you somehow know that if you let them know it's bothering you, it's going to really hurt. So the only way to protect yourself is act like you're better than you are. And so you do that thing, and it somehow protects you or makes you feel good, and it goes away, and you make believe that you don't remember it. But the point is that when you do that, what I didn't realize I was already building up a wall between me and other people so that I could never trust anybody, be vulnerable to anybody, or let them see who I was. So by the time I was in my 20s, that wall was 18 feet thick. And the only way I could even come close to getting that wall down is drink like a slob. I used to think I was a social drinker. Oh, I'm a bar drinker. I'm a social guy. But the bottom line is I didn't know how to socialize unless I was drunk. I didn't know how to have sex unless I was drunk. I didn't know how to relate to a woman unless I was drunk. You know, and coming into AA, alcoholics don't like associating with each other. We have to force ourselves to get it. Somebody said, you know what they say? We have to force ourselves to go to meetings initially. We've got to force ourselves to get a sponsor. We got to force ourselves to ask guys. I know how guys, you know, they come up and they say, listen, you know, they say things about getting a sponsor, and I've been thinking of getting one, and yeah, I don't really know what to do. And, you know, I let them go on for about 10 minutes, you know. I say, are you asking me whether I could be your sponsor? Well, yeah, sort of, you know. We don't want to do that stuff because we're isolators. We don't want to do that. So we got to force ourselves to do that. The default position for us is always to tear away from here and to go back. My sponsor tells me, he says, you got to join a group. I go to the South Day group. And I'm a guy who I always thought of myself as to be. I mean, you can see me as a pretty gregarious sort of guy. I'm not a shy guy, but I am a shy guy. I don't realize I'm a shy because it's all bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's all not true. It's not, none of it is honest relationships. It's all BS relationships. Nothing that's healthy. It's all unhealthy relationships. So he says, go to South East. So I go to the South East room to join this group, and I sit in the back of the room. Because when you don't know anybody, you sit in the back of the room. Because there's only one road. There's not two roads. There's only one road. You know, my impetus is I sit in the back of the room and I wait for them to call on me or to recognize me as the emperor in AA or somebody special or something. And they don't call me. I sit back there and I go, what a bunch of selfish craps. AA, this is crap. What a bunch of crap. They're all their little cliques. They're all laughing together. They're all shaking their hands. And everything. So I go back to my spices. So how was the South Day room? He says, it's crap. Bunch of hypocrites. Bunch of cliques. They don't care about anybody. You know, I sat there in the back. Nobody came up to me. He says, look. So you think what he'd do is he'd say, you're right. Try another room. So he said, listen, I want you to go back there. And this time I want you to join one of the cliques. He put the impetus on me to do something that was unnatural to me, and that is to go up to them. You know, like I need them. You know, I mean, think about this. This is like I'm supposed to go up to them because, you know, go up to, it's almost like I'm like, when I just announce, I'm like a weak piece of crap and I need you. You know what I mean? You know, like I need them. And he wants to do that because in the back of his head, he doesn't tell me that he knows I need them. You know what I mean? But I don't even know I need that. And even though I know I need that, I decide to lie to myself and say I don't need anybody. I don't need crap. They don't know who they're dealing with, you know? Because I've been telling myself this lie all along that I believe. That is, I don't need anybody. You know, I'm God. I'm me. You know, I can do it. You know what I mean? I don't need a sponsor. I don't need anybody. I know what's going on. But he knows that's a lie. That's the thing that's designed to keep me sick. Anybody you see going downhill in AA, even before you see them go downhill, they'll start isolating. They'll say things, they'll make excuses for not going to meetings, they'll tell themselves away, they'll start firing sponsees, or they won't bring on sponsees, they'll stop talking to meetings, they won't go to a lot of meetings, they won't have sponsees or anything, because to have a sponsee, that means you're accountable, you have to work with somebody, you gotta talk with somebody. They'll somehow develop their lives in such a way so they never have to actually, they'll have a wetsuit on where they're actually never touched by humanity in here. You'll see it happening to them, and it's just a matter of time. It may take a year, may take 5 years, may take 10 years. But it'll happen. They'll go down the tubes, or else they'll be miserable, blow their brains out, or something like this. That. So he says, go back there. So I go back there, and I go up to the guy, and I shake his hand. I say, my name's Russell. I'm from the car room. Hey, sit on down. They start talking to me. I start talking to the guys at the table. It goes around. You know, they I talk. I say something. They say, hey, that was great and everything like that. I go to my sponsor. And he says, so how was the meeting? He says, great meeting, great group. Whole different group of people. Whole different group of people. All about fellowship. All about fellowshipping. All about, you know, what is the result of the, you know, what is the, what, but here's the question you got to ask yourself. Here's the question I got to ask myself. I don't have to, I don't get too deep with this stuff psychologically, because I don't have to know psychologically. All I have to know is this, is that the truth is, deep down inside, I'm scared of people. I know, because the promises that this gentleman just read, you know, it says fear of people and of economic insecurity will lead. Fear of people. Why would it say fear? It says you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That has to do with fear. Why would they even put in there fear of people? If we weren't scared of people and scared of their judgment and scared. Listen, 90% of our thoughts of the people in here is, what do they think about me? What will they think about me if I do this? What will they think about me if I say that? You know, I mean, sitting there in school, you know, does anybody have the answer? I have the answer. Well, what if I'm wrong? Does anybody have a question? Anybody doesn't understand what's going on? I understand what's going on. Raise my hand. I said, what if I look stupid? You know? Listen, being scared of people will keep you stupid. Being scared of people will stop you from progressing. Being scared of people will completely change your lives. And you want to know something? If you're an alcoholic, even if you're not drinking, you only have one road to go. You don't have two roads. Because you can never raise your hand. Because you can never go up to the clique and say, let me join you. Because you can never, because you always have to sort of laugh at yourself and play that game and everything, because that's just as much a part of alcoholism as anything else. I walked into that South Aid room and I sat in the back of the room and I didn't say a thing to anybody. When I came back the next day, I shook hands and I talked to people. That was only because my sponsor ordered me to do that. If I didn't have a sponsor ordering me to do that, I would have chalked off South Aid and I would say, this AA stuff is bullshit. Now here's the question. Why did I do that? Why do I do that? Why do I sober walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting after being a few and sit in the back room and don't make friends with anybody, don't talk to anybody? Why do I? You know something? I don't have to know why I do it. You know what it says in the 12 and 12? It says, an alcoholic who doesn't admit or understand or accept his alcoholism and all its consequences, you know, he says his sobriety will be precarious. True happiness, he'll find none at all. All I have to know is at least in me, that's part of my deal. Yes, I'm sober. Yes, I'm not drinking. But part of my deal is when I come to the room, if I don't know anybody, I sit in the back of the room. I don't go up to people and act in any way like I think they might think I need them, or I'm weak, or I'm vulnerable, because they might laugh at me. I might be down at that football field again. I might have to go through that experience again. All I have to know is it's there and it's part of the deal. You know, and I need help to get over that. In order, I need help like of a sponsor, be surrounded by people. But how do I do that unless I ask stuff? It's like a trap. It's like a catch 22. What's the fifth step all about? You know what it's all about? It's all about bringing other people into your life. It's all about creating the fellowship. It's all about not only do you have to talk to God and open it up to God, you got to find another human being. It doesn't even say who it has to be. It just has to be arms, legs, eyes, you know, a mammal, a human, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter, you know, because you know something, because that's the deal. That's what you're going to be working with, other human beings. It sets you on the road for start having true and honest. Does that mean you have to be transparent with everybody? No, not necessarily, and tell everybody everything. You know what I mean? But I mean, as this thing opens up, as it opens up, you know, it opens up not only your relationship with God, but with other people. Like, it sort of happens at the same time. You know, you start having a relationship with yourself because you know who you are and you stop being embarrassed. And, you know, it takes away the shame. And as the shame goes away, you know what happens? The voices go away. The tapes go away. I mean, the only tapes, the other tapes, you got started, when you start going 8 and 9, all of a sudden other tapes start coming in like, you're all right, you're a good guy, you're a decent human being. You think there's a difference in the way a person acts and the way he feels and his attitude if the tape that's going on all the time is, you're a decent human being, you're a good guy, you're okay, versus you're a piece of shit, you're a piece of crap? Do you think that has to do with their attitude, how they feel about themselves, how they interact with other people? You're damn right it does. I don't care how many times you're like the boy whistling in the graveyard saying, I don't need this, and I don't care about that, and I don't want to drink. How many times you tell yourself the crap, you know, to make believe that you're something bigger than you are, or more grandiose, or anything like that. anything I do from here, you know, I appreciate being able to do this. This is a gift to be able to do this, you know, and it's like a 12-step thing, and it's a service, and I love doing it, and I just hope I give honor to God when I do it. That's really what I hope, that I give honor and glory to God when I do this thing. But I happen to know that the only reason I can do this, I couldn't do this when I had one day. I couldn't do this when I had 1 year. I couldn't do this when I had 3 years. I couldn't do what I'm doing. The only reason I'm doing this is a result of that. Because if you're transparent, because the more you grow, the more you mature, and the more you get become transparent and become a new freedom, a new happiness, this is like easy. Because you're just people, you know, and I love you, and there's nobody here who can hurt me. You know, I'm not here to hurt anybody else, you know, and I'm not worried about what other people, when you stop worrying, let me tell you something, when you're not worried about what other people are thinking, it gives you great, let me tell you something, you'd be surprised at all the crap you could say from the podium. You know what I found out? You know what I found out when I had 7 years? You know what I found out? I found that real secret. When you are not worried about being fired, when you don't care, you'd be surprised how great your job becomes. Your boss says, I need you to stay late. You say things like, no. Say, why not? He says, I'm going to an AA meeting. He says, well, I may have to fire. I said, okay, you know, let me know so I don't have to come in on Monday. Because, you know, all they can do at work, the only thing they can do is fire you. That's all they can, you know, they can't shoot you, they can't put you, they can only fire you. When you're not worried about being fired and you know God and you have a relationship with God and you know He'll produce and maybe you'll get even a better job. You're not supposed to be there. You'd be surprised at how wonderful works we got. I did that at work and they hung on for 3 more years and then they begged me not to leave. I mean, you can write your own ticket. You do it. I mean, I'm not saying you'd be obnoxious about it, but you could, yeah, you know, most of the people in AA are sitting around saying, what if they find out I'm an alcoholic? What if I don't get, you know, and that's a horrible job. You're all scared, right? Fear is all to do with it. It all has to do with this thing, with this fifth step. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how this is going to play in to the miracle transformation that's going to happen to you and the human being you're going to become. And if you don't get this thing, you're going to be one of the... Because I tell you this, in 27 years of being an Alcoholics Anonymous, I have never... Maybe there's one that exists. I don't know everybody now. I have never seen an alcoholic fall from the wagon, drink, commit suicide, any of that stuff, get depressed, go off the tubes. You know what I mean? Unless he's isolated, somehow isolated. He may be going to meetings, but he's isolated. Somehow he's isolated. No sponsees, no sponsor. Or if they have, it's like one of these deals like, you know, he's got a sponsor, but he never talks to him. Or he's got sponsees, he's never talking. You know, somehow has isolated himself. I've never seen guys on the bus. I'll tell you what, I've sponsored a lot of guys. A lot of guys. You can sponsor a lot of guys in AA. You know, you can sponsor 1,000 guys in AA. It's easy. You know why? Because 980 of them leave after the first week. No, I'm telling you, they do. Because this is what happened. They get on the bus. They're on the bus. And you're driving up in the bus. And all of a sudden, one guy turns around, a guy that you love, that you like. He's the greatest guy in the world. And you turn around and says, where's Charlie? And he says, he got off the bus. So what do you mean he got off the bus? He said he got on the last stop, you know, at that gal's house. He got off the bus. He's at that gal's house. Where's Joe? He got off the bus. He's over at that work. He's with that car. He's over at the Marlins gate. They get off the bus. Now, it's okay to get off the bus, but you get back on. Some guys get off the bus, get back on, get off the bus. Some guys just stay on the bus. But most of the people, somewhere along the road, whether it be 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, they get off the bus. I got a guy call me up from, this is a true story. This has happened to me actually before, but this just happened to me a week ago, so I'll share it. Called me up from Houston, like last week, right after this meeting. I said, Joe, I'm like, do you remember me? I'm Scott, you know. And I said, yeah, Scott, I think I remember you, 18. He says, you sponsored me. I said, yeah, I honestly didn't remember. I mean, I remember. I said, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, right. You know, and he says well, you know, I'm looking for a new sponsor. I mean, these guys, to get off, they get on the bus again. They drift away for 10 years, you know what I mean? They come back. You know, you got to stay on the bus. Staying on the bus and having relationships with people. This fifth step where we clear away these obstacles and have an obstacle with, you know what it says in the big book? He says, we will meet you all in the fellowship of the Spirit. In the fellowship of the Spirit. There's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that is not the fellowship of the Spirit. People who are in the fellowship of the Spirit know they're in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know what I mean? I can look in somebody's eyes. We can talk. We're into the same deal. We're into this thing. We're into God. We're into fellowship. We're into spiritual stuff. We're in the same deal. You know what I mean? We like hanging out with each other. We like talking about this stuff. We want to dig deeper. We're sending each other emails. Some of you guys are on my email list. We're sending. Then there are guys that are not in the sub-fellowship. They write back and say, stop sending me these spiritual emails. You know what I say? Okay. Okay, they're just not in the fellowship. They just, it's wrong. They're on my email list. I send them an email, not designed to hurt anybody, about it. And I got 20 people that write me back saying, I love your emails. I can't tell you what they did to me. They uplifted me. And I got one guy maybe up and says, please take me off your list. He's getting off the bus. That's okay. I understand that deal. He's off the bus. God bless him. He's off the bus. That's alcoholics now. That's why we're all here. You see? Some next week, be a couple guys off the bus. There'll be a couple guys on. You know, that's the way it works. Thank you.